This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. It is Sunday, February 23rd, 2025. Hello, everybody. I'm Rob Jerislein, host here every week. I will be with you for the next hour. Thanks so much for tuning in, where we're going to talk some outdoor topics. Couple fun segments coming up. We will talk with Dan Stark. He is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources large predator specialist, the big carnivore guy for the DNR, the agency talking about revamping some of its boundaries for bear hunters in the state. Hasn't been done in like 30 years. So I thought we would devote a segment to that with Dan, maybe ask him about wolves a little bit. I think there is a wolf survey, population survey underway this winter. There was not one last year, so we'll get Dan's quick take on that. Then we'll look west a little bit. I've got a scribe out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, young man named Josh Heyer, who's been doing some writing about outdoor topics in that state. Their legislature is underway, and there's a number of interesting bills brewing that could affect non-residents. Certainly a lot of Minnesotans head out to South Dakota for pheasant hunting, turkey hunting, things like that. So we will get Josh's take on what's brewing in Pierre, the capital of South Dakota. Closer to home here in Minnesota, I believe I mentioned last week that today is the last day of the walleye and northern pike inland waters fishing season for Minnesota. Now, of course, you can continue to fish panfish, perch, bluegills, etc. continuously, right? That season runs all year, so as long as you got ice, go out and fish panfish all you want. But walleyes, northern pike, and bass officially ends today. End of the day. If you want to fish till midnight, you can do that, but it's getting dark out there, so I suspect a lot of folks are coming off the ice right now. Now, of course, there's border waters open, too. We want to be clear about that. Places like Lake of the Woods. My friend Joe Henry always wants me to remind folks the walleye season on Lake of the Woods goes, I think, till April 14th this year. We might darn near have ice that long this year with as thick as it's been. Although these warmer temperatures, things can change quickly. We'll talk about that a little bit later, maybe in terms of what that could mean for the snow goose migration. That might accelerate quickly. But for right now, we got a lot of ice. So even though this inland waters walleye season is wrapping up today, still some of the best pan fishing of the year, really, through the hard water is coming up over the next several weeks. Hand in hand with that are shelter removal deadlines. Yeah, those are already kicking in. Border waters for Minnesota and Wisconsin. You got to have your fish house off any of those by next Saturday, March 1st. Then all inland waters in Minnesota, south of that line, what is Highway 10, 34, 200, it's like the bottom two-thirds of the state. That begins a week from tomorrow, I believe, Monday, March 3rd. You got to have your permanent fish houses off. Now, you can still take your fish houses out during the day and fish all day, and then but when you leave at night, you got to bring it with you. And then north of the line, 2 weeks later, on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. But then, reminder, border waters, Minnesota, Wisconsin, March 1st, that's next Saturday. Then Minnesota, North and South Dakota, I guess that would be Wednesday, March 5th. And then Minnesota and Canada, those border waters, not till the end of the month, March 31st. Stays colder up there, They can leave those permanent fish houses out later till the end of March. But that's kind of a sign that the season is wrapping up, right? And spring's not too far around the corner. Before we go to our first break, got time for one quick news headline. And the big one this week, of course, were all the federal layoffs. Those affected some natural resources agencies on the national level. U.S. Forest Service was the big one, like 3,400, 3,500 National Forest Service employees let go, another 1,000 within the National Park Service, and then between 400 and 500 for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I had not heard about any cuts at Bureau of Land Management yet. I suspect they're coming. Maybe they got by me, but that's a huge federal agency managing a lot of public lands. Trying to dial in and determine exactly who these people are and what they do and what services will no longer be provided has been very challenging. The public information officer staff in the region, the Great Lakes region, we made some calls. They referred us all to Washington, D.C., and no one there was responding to calls or emails. I will be spending a fair amount of time over the next several weeks and months trying to determine what won't happen at our national wildlife refuges here in Minnesota. We have several. We've got many dozens of waterfowl production areas managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And, of course, we have vast national forests in the northern portion of the state. What is this going to mean for their management? We don't have so many national parks. We've got Voyageurs, and I'm sure they've been impacted. But probably the most visible cuts will be at national parks because our national parks are absolutely overwhelmed with visitors. I did a little checking on some of the stats. National parks had 325 million visitors last year, and their staff was already down like 20% from 2010. And that's despite national park visitation being at an all-time high. That's actually pretty embarrassing that we're talking about cutting positions from national parks, given that their staffing was already down tremendously. And, you know, maybe some dedicated listeners out there know that I'm a parent. I've taken my kids to national parks a number of times. And I'll tell you one thing that I'm always struck with when I visit our big national parks is the busload after busload after busload of international tourists waving wads of cash who come to our national parks. They're unique in the world. The rest of the world hasn't saved great spaces like we have. And I always ask, I wonder what percentage of our GDP, gross domestic product, we can chalk up to international tourism visiting our national parks. I bet it's a pretty big number. And slashing services at national parks, which could impede that tourism, that contribution to our GDP, is cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, it's tripping over a $20 bill to pick up, you know, a nickel in savings. In a story I wrote about these federal cuts this week, I quoted Lan Tawney, who I completely agree with when he said, you know, we're all for taking a scalpel and excising marginal federal employees or eliminating waste or fat where it exists. But that's not what this is. This isn't merit-based. This is just wielding a meat cleaver randomly in the name of saving a few pennies here. And, you know, a few pennies are going to add up in some places. But in the case of national parks, I have no doubt that these cuts are going to cost the American economy. Maybe I'll swing back to some of my national park experiences later in the show. But lest anyone accuse me of mincing words, allow me to be clear. I think the vast majority of these cuts to federal natural resource agencies are flat out ignorant and are probably being implemented by people who have never visited a national park or a national wildlife refuge or a national forest in their lives. And so these public land spaces don't mean a whole lot to them and they don't care. Well, a lot of us do use these lands. A lot of Americans do use these lands, and we do care, and we need to be saying hell no. On that blunt, upbeat note, we can grab a break. We'll talk about bear hunting here in Minnesota when we return. You're listening to WCCO Outdoors.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, February 23rd. We are going to talk about black bear hunting in the state here in just a few minutes. Before we do that, though, a frequent topic I have brought up on the broadcast is allowing crossbows during the regular archery hunting season. The legislature approved that 2 years ago. So we've had two autumns of crossbows during the entire archery season, 2023 and 2024. This past fall, I think close to half of the harvest during the quote-unquote archery season occurred via crossbows, like 48 or 49%. So they've become very popular very quickly. The inclusion of crossbows in the archery hunting season is scheduled to sunset this year unless the legislature acts. Well, there is a bill in the legislature. Two Democrats and one Republican state senator have co-sponsored Senate File 1251 that would eliminate that sunset date. So if that passes, crossbows again will be allowed this fall. I'm almost sure some form of that will pass because these things have gotten so popular. I wish the legislature would also include like a $5 or $10 endorsement so the state at least makes a little money for wildlife management on this incredible liberalization of the archery hunting season, which is now allows crossbows. But that's my personal cause, and no one else seems to have jumped on that bandwagon. Okay, so moving on. It's the middle of winter, but it's not too early to start talking about black bear hunting, which is actually a fairly early hunting season in the state. Usually gets going around the 1st of September. I got a special guest who's joining me now. He's been on the broadcast before, but I think it's been a while. His name is Dan Stark. He's from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and he is the state large carnivore specialist. Dan, thanks for carving out some time for me.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
First of all, how many bears do we have in the state right now? Do we have a general population estimate? And we're coming off a pretty good bear hunting season in 2024, aren't we?
Yeah, we don't do a population estimate, or at least we haven't done a bear population estimate since about 2008. The methods that we used aren't available to us anymore, but we do model the population based on the age of bears that are harvested every season. And that's why we ask bear hunters to submit a tooth. It's a requirement. And based on that, we can get an estimate or a general model of where the bear population is at. And we're probably somewhere between about 12 to 15,000 bears in Minnesota. And that's a pretty significant decline from the mid-1990s when we were probably at least 20,000, probably, not quite double that. And we saw a pretty significant decline from the mid-1990s through about 2010. About the bear population probably declined by about 30%. And it seemed like we were always kind of chasing the population down a little bit with trying to reduce bear licenses to have some reduced bear hunting harvest so that we could see the population rebound. And we finally saw that turn around in about 2010. And so within the quota area where we restrict licenses, there's been a pretty steady increase since that time. And that's kind of what we want to see, have a stable to slightly increasing population. Now, the no quota area, which is outside of the area where we restrict licenses, anybody can buy a license. We don't limit those in a lottery process. The population there has been on the increase since about the mid-1990s, and it's probably doubled, since that time. And so it's kind of just been this gradual increase over time for the last about 30 years. And it doesn't seem like it's slowing down. And most of that's probably through some range expansion, but it's also, if you're familiar with the landscape, it's a highly productive landscape for bears because there's kind of a mix of forest and agriculture, and bears tend to do pretty well in that landscape.
It would seem like people are becoming more tolerant of bears a little bit, and bears may be becoming a little more tolerant to people. Is that a fair assessment? And maybe that's contributing to the growth of the bear population in the no quota zone. And we should be clear for listeners maybe who aren't familiar with some of these terms. No quota zone, mostly kind of the northeastern quarter of the state or third of the state?
Well, that's the quota area. Where we have bear permit areas where we restrict the number of licenses to hunters. And that's kind of the traditional core bear range, the northern and central forested part of the state. Everything outside of that is no quota area. That line has essentially been in place since the early 1990s. And probably when it was defined, there weren't really any bears outside of that quota area anyway. Bears had primarily been restricted to the northern forested part of the state, but over time they've expanded.
Well, that gets us to the gist of this interview, I guess, Dan, is the DNR is talking about adjusting those boundaries a little bit. What's the plan? Is it to maybe expand that quota area?
Yeah, we're revising the no quota boundary a little bit based on what those population trends have been doing and what some of the conflicts that have occurred in that part of the state. We started with kind of an experimental unit that we had carved a portion out of Bear Permit Area 45, which is primarily central Minnesota from kind of the Brainerd, starts in about Little Falls and then goes up to, kind of Cross Lake area. That's traditionally what the unit was. And we took the southern portion of that off, created a bear permit area we called 451. And then we opened it up. We let anybody that wanted to hunt there buy a license and hunt. And that started in 2020. We saw a pretty steady increase in the number of bear complaints with crop damage starting from about 2017 through about 2020. And that's when we made that change. When we increased the number of hunters that hunted in the area, we saw a pretty significant increase in the number of bears that were killed by hunters, but it also had a pretty significant effect on reducing the number of complaints and conflicts. And the bear population appears to still be doing pretty good there based on, what we've seen in the response. So we think that it can continue to, maintain a bear population, but help address some of the conflicts. So that's why we were proposing this change to turn that area into, really adopt it permanently as part of the no quota area. And then we've also made some additional revisions along that western boundary where the landscape is more agricultural land, more open landscape outside of the forested area, kind of more minor revisions there.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. I'm Rob Dreisline, chatting with Dan Stark. He's the Minnesota DNR's large carnivore specialist. We're talking about some changes to the no quota and quota zone boundary for black bear hunting in Minnesota. It hasn't been changed in a long time. There's been some small changes, but basically the quota area hasn't changed a whole lot since the 1990s. I see from the DNR's press release, Dan, that also there were two permit areas for bears in the boundary waters, and that's just going to be one now?
Yeah, there's a portion of the boundary waters that is outside kind of the core boundary waters unit. It's called the Trout Lake unit, and that's currently in the bear permit area 25. And so we're proposing that that area become part of bear permit area 22, which is kind of that exclusive boundary waters area. It would just add some consistency to, you know, access based on what requirements there are for visiting the boundary waters.
Dan, overall, I'd like to think this is a good thing that the DNR is making this proposal. This means that we're successful with managing bears and that this population is growing. I would like to think this is good news if you like wildlife in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think the approach is intended to kind of reflect the reality of bears on the landscape based on those landscape conditions. So, you know, where it's more open landscape and agriculture and kind of a mix of forests, we're trying to align the boundaries as much as we can to kind of match that forest agricultural transition area where it makes the most sense. And then, you know, in those areas that we still need to restrict the number of licenses to maintain and make sure that the bear population continues to be resilient to those hunting opportunities, we maintain that as it is.
We took, about 3,500 bears last fall? I think that was up from 2023. It wasn't a great natural food year, and that contributed to that little higher harvest. Do I have that right, Dan?
Yeah, probably the biggest influence last year was the summer food conditions. You know, were really poor. Maybe within, you know, some of the top poor food years on record since we've been monitoring that. And there's a real strong correlation with the fall food conditions and hunter harvest. But when bears go into that in poor condition, they're probably going to be more likely to be attracted to baits and utilize that as a, you know, for their nutritional needs. There were some things that stood out or were notable from a number of bears that were killed. It was the highest that we've seen since about 2003, but still not a record. That occurred in the mid-1990s.
Okay.
But we did have, for the opening day, as far as my records go back, it was the highest single day total that we had by almost 400 bears.
Wow. Definitely quite a year. Being a Southeast Minnesota guy, Dan, I always like to ask this question. We've got a few bears kicking around the Southeast now, right? Is that still holding steady down there?
Yeah, we get reports of bears. I think we've had one bear registered in the last 5 years in the Southeast, you know, from hunting, because that is no quota area. So anybody could hunt down there. If they want to buy a license, they could hunt in the area. Yeah, it seems like, you know, bears are slowly expanding and occupying, you know, new areas every year. And we kind of track that with some of the reporting that we have. We have an online site that people can record their bear observations
right
outside the core bear range.
Can they get to that by mndnr.gov/bear? Dan, is that
yeah? They can find it there. Yep.
And that brings up a good point. So there's a public comment period on this bear permit area boundary revisions that the DNR is proposing. That comment period goes through Monday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Again, you can go to mndnr.gov/bear if you want to comment. There's a questionnaire there, huh?
Yeah, you can find the information on the proposed changes, and there's a questionnaire that people can provide feedback and identify some areas that we might make some improvement to this proposal.
There's also a webinar a week from this Tuesday, March 4th, 6 to 7 p.m. Again, you can find that link to that webinar, mndnr.gov/bear. I presume you'll be involved with that webinar, Dan.
Yeah, we'll be given a brief overview of the information on the proposal.
Yeah, so if folks want more details, just go there. Before I let you go, Dan, I got to ask one quick wolf question. We did not do a wolf survey, a year ago, but there's one underway right now. Is that correct?
Yeah, we weren't able to do a population estimate last winter because we had limited counts on packs because of the snow conditions. It's hard to count wolves from a plane when there isn't snow on the ground to help them stand out. And so, yeah, we're resuming that this winter and also estimating the wolf range, which we do more periodically, kind of assess where wolves are in the state and then come up with a population estimate based on that.
Good. Well, that's another headline we'll look forward to probably later this year. Dan, thanks for carving out some time for me. Thanks for all you do to manage our big carnivores here in the state.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
That was Dan Stark, large carnivore specialist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. One more time, go to mndnr.gov/bear if you want more information on the topic that we just chatted about here. With that, let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830 on this Sunday, February 23rd. Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. You know, it opened already this past week is the spring lake goose hunting season. Yeah, that opened on Tuesday, February 18th. Now, it's relatively meaningless given the fact that there are no snow geese in Minnesota right now. We don't get a whole lot passing through Minnesota almost at all anymore. We get a few in the fall and a few in the spring. And there are a few guys that pick up a few snow geese during the spring conservation order here in Minnesota. Most, however, go to South Dakota. And, you know, a week ago, it seemed like that season was months away, right? Well, now, man, with these warmer temperatures in the 40s, probably even a little warmer out in South Dakota, that snow line is going to start moving up quickly. And as soon as we start getting a little bit of open water, patch open water in some of the fields, snow geese are going to start descending on South Dakota. So I will start making some calls and keep listeners posted on the status of that snow goose migration, see if there's some opportunity out there this spring. And speaking of South Dakota, that state is the topic of this segment. Right now, introducing somebody who's never been a guest on the broadcast before, but I'm really excited to have him. He's an outdoors writer from the state of South Dakota who's been stringing some content from that state to Outdoor News. His name is Josh Heyer. He hails from Sioux Falls, but you're spending most of your time in Pierre these days. Is that right, Josh?
That's correct. Our lawmakers have convened for the 100th legislative session out in Pierre.
Your day job, you do most of your writing. Folks can see a lot of your bylines at South Dakota Searchlight, a website out there. Josh, before we talk about the legislative session, I'd like to circle back on a column you wrote about the non-resident turkey tags in the Black Hills. You are talking to someone who's shot a couple of turkeys out in the Black Hills. I know a lot of guys who go out to the Black Hills every year. They look forward to that. There's a lot of national forests out there to go and chase a Miriam's gobbler. But South Dakota, what was it last year they decided to lower the number of non-resident turkey permits available in the Black Hills? And is that kicking in this spring?
Yeah, that's back in July of 2024. They announced that they would be capping that number at 2,225 non-resident licenses.
So, Josh, any idea how many non-residents were buying wild turkey hunting tags in the Black Hills? How many, on average, have been buying turkey tags out there in recent years?
The 2024 spring season saw 3,170. And I think around that 3,000 number is what folks were seeing where they were really complaining of a lot of competition. Residents in the state, I should say.
Okay, so the number of non-residents that can get a tag out there is going to drop by close to 1,000. And that does kick in this spring, Josh?
That does kick in this spring.
Again, the reason for this is we've got resident hunters out there just concerned that too many non-residents were running around and killing too many birds and just occupying some of that federal public land. It's just too much pressure, too much competition for opportunity.
That's a big thing out there in the Black Hills right now. You know, especially with the advent of archery deer hunting for mule deer in particular out there, you know, that's just become so popular. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of frustration, I think, with public land access coming from residents in that area now.
Josh, do you know, had the number of wild turkey tags being sold to non-residents, had that increased? Do you know how many there were, say, 20 years ago? Do you know that?
I don't know it off the top of my head. I do know they have seen an increase.
Limiting non-resident access out there, number of permits has been a big deal in South Dakota for a long time. A lot of our waterfowlers have been complaining about that for decades, and that's just the way it is. Let's talk about some of the legislation that you're following in Pierre right now, Josh. Your legislative session, you were telling me off air, goes for several more weeks. What's the big thing, I guess, you're following? Guides for licenses sounds like a big one.
That's one of the ones I'm going to be following closely. What they're looking to do is basically put some kind of regulatory structure on guiding in South Dakota. South Dakota is one of three states that does not require licenses for guides. Now, it's worth noting when I say that you already do need a license if you're guiding on federal land or a waterfowl production area, but state-owned land, you do not, and they want to see some regulation there.
So this would apply to any sort of guide? I mean, there's a lot of folks out there that guide turkey hunters, right? A lot of people from Minnesota who go out there to hunt turkeys, they'll hire a guide. So that guide now needs a license, huh?
That guide now needs a license. The dollar amount on that is yet to be determined. So South Dakota's Wildlife Management Department, it is overseen by a commission appointed by the governor. And that commission, if this bill is passed, will be tasked with deciding how much money, you know, setting those license fees. There's also liability insurance mandates and record keeping requirements. All of that stuff will be decided by that commission. And that will also be the opportunity for public input as well.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. I'm Rob Driesline. We're talking with Josh Heyer, a outdoors writer based out in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He's spending a lot of time in Pierre right now during the legislative session. He writes a South Dakota column for Outdoor News to keep Minnesotans up to speed on what's happening out in that state to our west and how some changes might be affecting non-resident hunters. There's also a bill you said that would, what, double the shooting safety zone? What's that all about? I bet that would interest some of our pheasant hunters who go to South Dakota.
So currently, any occupied building or livestock, you need to be 660 feet away before discharging your firearm. The bill would double that to 1,320. You know, there's at least one outfitter who's advocating for this bill. Folks complain during the pheasant season of their sheds being peppered by BBs type of thing. And so it'll be a question whether or not that can get over the finish line.
What do you think? Well, what are the odds of that? I got to think there are some resident hunters that might not be thrilled with that one.
Well, that's right. You're going to definitely see a big pushback, I think, from your public land hunter who is now going to have places where maybe, you know, they could hunt before that. Now a little bit of that space is limited, or your road hunters who like, you know, cruising along and jumping out to shoot a couple of pheasants in the ditch.
I've only pheasant hunted South Dakota a couple times, and one time I was out there with some relatives, and they were doing the road hunting thing, which was something I had never experienced before. I wasn't real comfortable with it, period. I was kind of surprised it was something that was even legal, but I could see how this would absolutely prevent hunters from participating in that, because it would double it from, what'd you say, 660 to over 1,300 feet. That's a pretty good distance. I mean, there's a lot of farms out there along those roads.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that is the predominant group who will be affected by this. You know, you did bring up the point, though, there are, within the hunting community, there's a number of folks who kind of see it as undermining fair chase. A lot of those birds are your Penrise pheasants. Whether or not it'll pass really comes down to how many members of the public really get aware of this and how many emails lawmakers receive. You know, that's really a lot of the game with these types of things. Mm-hmm. They get a ton of emails and pushback from folks saying, you know, this encroaches on my ability to pursue game. Maybe they'll stop it.
Josh, is there a lot of feedback on this? Are you seeing chatter on social media? Are you seeing letters to the editor? Has there been any backlash to it?
I do know, you know, there are groups, for example, South Dakota Wildlife Federation being one, is already organizing around a number of these bills. And I think any and all of them are going to at least get some testimony and feedback from groups representing public hunters in the state.
Finally, you also mentioned some legislation involving the Nest Predator Bounty Program. Why don't you tell us what that program is to start with?
So the Nest Predator Bounty Program was introduced under former Governor Kristi Noem. When it was introduced, the idea was this is going to limit nest predators and increase the state's pheasant population, which is always a concern. The pushback from a lot of hunters at the time was you're allocating $500,000 in hunting license fees towards trapping raccoons, and we would rather see that go towards habitat improvement and access. And, you know, as the years went on, there was no data presented to show that this program was improving pheasant numbers. The department, frankly, kind of pivoted towards saying this is now about getting youth out trapping and keeping our trapping heritage strong. But I think a lot of hunters just aren't buying it, and this is an attempt to put an end to it.
So there's a bill that would end this. What are the odds you think that this one passes?
I think its chances of getting through the legislature are pretty good. There's bipartisan support for it. There's quite a few Republicans who recognize the frustration hunters have with, you know, how their license dollars are being used. But on the other end, our new governor is a guy named Larry Roden, who is a West River rancher, landowner, and that landowning community has a different view on wildlife management.
Yeah, they like bounties and that sort of thing, even though they never work. When this program was introduced, I probably wrote at the time it was a complete waste of time and money. Hunters' dollars, who knows, maybe some of my own hunting dollars went into this waste of a program to kill predators. When every biologist, anyone who has followed pheasant populations, duck populations, conservation over the past half century, three quarters of a century, will tell you it's about habitat. It's about putting grass on the ground. It's about not draining more wetlands. But that's not real popular with a lot of politicians, especially in South Dakota, right? They don't want more grass on the ground. They want more crops on the ground, but they want to keep the pheasants out there to keep the tourists coming in to buy licenses. What do we do? Well, let's put a Band-Aid on it. So we're going to shoot more predators so there's more pheasants. And it never works. It's always a waste. Different predators come back in. There's a lot of nasty ways of putting it, but it's just a waste of money.
You know, part of it, too, is South Dakota, we're really wrestling between, like, what is pheasant hunting going to look like? You know, when you have wild birds and you also have those pen-raised pheasants, a huge part of this is pen-raised pheasants. They're not going to recognize the difference from a coyote or raccoon and know how to, like, evade and play that game. And I think that was a huge part of this is the Noam administration really leaned into shooting preserves, frankly. We ended the brood count under her with the idea. Yeah. It's in Game, Fish, and Parks promotional material because they didn't want media headlines saying low bird numbers, right?
Yep. Yep. We reported that. We ranted and raved about that. That was horrible.
But what you just said is a great point. You know, if good habitat and quality and amount of habitat creating more animals, for lack of a better term, no longer holds true if what it becomes is you can have a barren section of public land and just dump a bunch of pheasants out there that were raised in a cage.
Well, Josh, this will be a real interesting one to see if it passes. Real quick, final question. So, yeah, Kristi Noem went to Washington, D.C. You got a new governor. Is that shaking up the whole department? Are you going to have a new Game and Fish Parks director, that sort of thing? Are you going to have new people out there?
There are not a lot of staffing changes, frankly, but we are seeing a huge change in tone. And I can tell you for folks like yourself and I, it's a breath of fresh air. You shoot an email now, you're getting responses.
Ooh,
people are getting
concept.
Interviews, and that's a difference.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. Well, Josh, so glad to have you on board as a South Dakota columnist at Outdoor News. I encourage folks to check out what you've got going at your day job at South Dakota Searchlight. Look at that website. You can read what Josh has got cooking. I've been fun chatting with you. We'll have you back again sometime.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. That was Josh Heyer, outdoor scribe from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, updating us on some of the things cooking in our neighbor to the west. We're going to grab a break. More WCCO Outdoors after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. It is Sunday, February 23rd, final segment of this week's broadcast. Thank you very much to my guests, and thank you to the listeners who've joined us for the past hour. I opened the show ranting a little bit about my concerns about cuts to the National Park Service, and I want to share a personal anecdote just to show it's not all about dollars and cents to me. I truly believe the national parks bring in far more revenue to this country than we spend on staffing. But national park memories are important to me and my family for a number of reasons. And one thing that stands out to me is when I take my kids to any outdoor activity, I run them hard. I'll be honest. We go pretty hard. We go full tilt. We hike a lot, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 miles, you know, and then maybe get them ice cream at the end of the day, right? Feed them, clean them up, get them ready for bed. And you know something we would do before we would go to bed? I remember specifically in Glacier National Park every night, we'd walk down to kind of a campfire area where they would have a park ranger, a national park ranger, give a little talk on some facet of natural history in the area or a story about the region. And I admit to being a little arrogant sometimes. I don't like to attend those things because I've devoted myself to understanding the outdoors and American natural history. And lots of times I know a lot more about it than even some of these rangers do. I'm sorry if that sounds arrogant, but it's just the truth. But nonetheless, talk about a quintessential American moment, right? You got the park ranger there in the big wide flat rim hat and the uniform. You got a campfire. You got kids not staring at screens. You got kids sitting around enthralled listening to these guys. Some of them are really good. And some of them do know more about facets of the outdoors than I do. I remember listening to one at Glacier, a guy talking about the wolverines in the park and how their population was rebounding. And you got kids and families of all races, creeds, and colors from all over the country. I remember there was a group camping next to us, some Boy Scouts from upstate New York, enjoying this all-American moment together, learning together out of doors. I tell you what, folks, the rest of the world envies the hell out of us for moments like that. And that has value you can't put a price tag on. I hope everybody out there listening grasps what I just said. I've been a deficit hawk since before it was cool. And I firmly believe the national parks bring in more dollars than we spend from the federal treasury. But you know what? If that moment I just described contributes to the deficit a little bit, find somewhere else to make your cuts. How's that? With that, I'll try not to rant as much next week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Rob Dreisland, signing off for another week of WCCO Outdoors.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.